Another verse by Master Hua. Understanding the mind and seeing the nature. Multitudes from the 10 directions come to investigate Chan, cherish every minute and second. Moving or still, awake or asleep, carefully investigate. When empty space is smashed, you'll understand your mind. Though the Dharma realm is still the same, you see your own nature. Where do you search for your original face? Right here at Old Gold Mountain. A hint of skill. When you sit and do this work, you should sit properly and very straight. You shouldn't lean back and tilt your head back, nor should you lean forward and bow your head down. You should keep your head erect. Your eyes should regard your nose and look to see if your nostrils are pointing up or down. Look at the nose clearly. The nose regards the mouth. Does a nose have eyes that it can see the mouth? In time, the nose will produce eyes. You just tell it to look, and it will look and look until eventually the nose will be able to see the mouth. Then you'll say, oh, basically, that's the way the mouth is. The mouth knows the heart. Is the heart black, white, yellow, red? Is the heart green, white, yellow, red, or black? What kind of heart is it? Ask it and see. If you see a black heart, then day by day, you can change its color, change it to white, until it becomes the great storehouse of light that unites the Dharma realm. Then there will be a little hope for you. When you breathe, don't use your mouth. That is, if you are able to breathe through your nose. Some people find it very, very difficult to breathe through their noses, but try. Using your nose to breathe, breathe in and put the breath behind your navel. Stop it behind your navel, not below. That place is empty, vacuous. There isn't anything there. It's just what is meant by basically there isn't anything at all. Basically, there's not one thing. That just refers to this place. You want to stop your breath at that point. When you can do that, then you will know what people mean when they ask each other, are you able to link your breath? Can you link your breath? That's a very important question. If you can link your breath, then the outside breath is just the inside breath, and the inside breath is just the outside breath. So someone who has the way can cease his outer breath, and yet his internal breath moves. Although no breath is coming in and out of his nostrils or his mouth, every pore on his body is able to breathe in and out. He looks like a dead man, yet he's dead and not gone. What does that mean? It means he's living, but he does not need to use his outer breath because the internal breath has come to life. When someone gets to that level of skill, then the eyes see forms, but inside there is nothing. The ears hear sounds, but the mind does not distinguish them. Contemplating within, one finds no mind. Contemplating without, one finds no forms. Looking into the distance, all the myriad things are empty. But when a person reaches that point, he should not think that he's such great stuff. What's being experienced is a preliminary expedient. It's a glimmering of light ease. One should not mistake a thief for one's son and think that because of this bit of light ease, one has become peerless. What's so peerless about that? Anyone who thinks that way is really shameless. Such a person has failed to recognize himself. Getting a little hint of skill, he's become satisfied. In fact, he's still miles away from Buddhahood. So the lesson here is, don't obtain a little and be satisfied with that. Don't be like a child who becomes overjoyed by one little piece of candy. That kid is delighted by one piece of candy without realizing that in his own home there's a stash of sweets so vast that it's beyond conception. It's always there. It's just that he's unable to get a hold of it and eat it. That's the way it is with people who get a little and are satisfied. Question. Why is it the one sees but does not see? Answer by the master. It's because one is reflecting and being introspective. Question. Why is it that one listens but does not hear? Answer by the master. It is because one is turning one's hearing inward to listen to one's inherent nature. Question. Why is it that one sniffs but smells nothing? Answer by the master. It's because one's body and mind are collected so that they are not turned by the objects of scent. Question. What kind of states are real? Answer by the master. States that occur before a thought has arisen are real. Once deluded thoughts wiggle their way to the surface, you have already begun thinking about what you would like to see. Consequently, most of what you perceive is false. Master's verse for starting a Chan session. Continuously, without a break. During this Chan session in 1978, be neither fast or slow, and don't be nervous. Perpetual diligence and undaunted vigor will bring you soon within the reach of Buddhahood. Suddenly, step by step. Sudden enlightened understanding comes through the Chan of the Thus Come Ones. Sudden enlightened understanding. Most people interpret the meaning of sudden here as instantaneous, but in the context of this verse, it should mean right now. So what's the difference between instantaneous and right now? Well, instantaneous lacks a before and after. It is not connected with anything previous, nor with anything to come. One gets enlightened instantly. It has nothing to do with what has gone on before or with what is going to happen later. It's very abrupt. Right now means at this moment, but it is different from instantaneous. Right now still has connections with both past and future. It is not cut off from what has gone on before or with what is going to come after. It means right at this moment. Instantaneous has a sense of being cut off. Right now is not cut off. That is an analysis of those words. For most people, sudden enlightenment means awakening very fast, and so they explain it as meaning instantaneous. But if we look at the word in detail, sudden means reaching a certain place. When do we reach there? We reach there based on where we were before. From where we are before, we reach there step by step. It is certainly not the case that without taking a single step, we get enlightened. That is not the meaning of sudden. Off by a hair's breadth to start with, we'll miss by 1,000 miles in the end. Thus, most people explain sudden enlightenment to mean instantaneous awakening. But that seems to imply that they never cultivated before, and they need not cultivate in the future. They're finished. But that is not the meaning. Sudden actually means that a person cultivated before and now, reaching this point, he becomes enlightened. But after that enlightenment, he must continue to cultivate. The noumenal principle can be awakened to suddenly, but the phenomenal aspects of the principle must be cultivated gradually. Now, why do I say that? We should know that everything has to be logical. Things in the world follow logical progression. Take a large tree, for example. When did the tall tree first sprout? Well, probably several hundred years ago. A tree cannot be that large, that tall, on the day it sprouts. Trees are like that, and so are people. We gradually grow as we age until we reach adulthood. In China, adulthood is marked by being capped. When is a person ready to be capped? A child is born and progresses from being a 1-year-old to being 20 years old. At 20, that person is considered an adult. He is capped. Now, a person cannot be 20 years old when he is first born. Comparing that example to sudden enlightenment, the same principle applies. Sudden enlightenment is the culmination that comes from gradual cultivation. It is not that someone immediately awakens without having ever cultivated. Even if he didn't cultivate in the previous life and became suddenly enlightened in this life, it would still mean that he had cultivated in the past in order to reach this point. In this life, his conditions are mature and he suddenly becomes enlightened. That is why I say that sudden enlightenment comes from gradual cultivation. And after enlightenment, one still has to cultivate gradually. We cannot say that the enlightenment is immediate and has no connection with what came before and what will come after. Sudden enlightened understanding. Enlightened understanding means awakening, becoming clear about the principle. But after you understand the principle, you still have to cultivate. If you do not cultivate, then the awakening is of no use at all. Let us use the example of putting together a computer. We understand the principles involved in putting together a computer. We know how we put in the software and what hardware to use. We know how to put everything together so that the computer will function. But if we only know the principles involved and we do not actually put the computer together, then our knowledge of how to set it up will be of no use. So after understanding the principle, we need to go ahead and put the computer together. Only then will the computer exist. Before the first computer was assembled, I am sure that many people had the idea of assembling a computer, but they never got around to doing it. All they did was think about it, but nobody went ahead and invented it. If you understand a principle but you do not apply it, you do not put it into practice, then nothing actual will come of it. If you become enlightened, you still have to actually cultivate. Even more must you apply effort. Those of old said, before you understand the great matter, it is as if your parents had died. After you understand the great matter, it is even more as if your parents had died. Before you understand the great matter means before you get enlightened. After you understand the great matter, after you are enlightened, you are even more serious than if your parents had died. You are even more careful in all that you do. That is what getting enlightened is like. After we understand the principle, we must strengthen ourselves even more and keep on pushing forward in our cultivation. That is the only way that the computer, literally the electric brain, and the spiritual brain, will manifest. The quote says, sudden enlightened understanding comes through the chan of the Thus Come Ones. Thus Come One is one of the 10 titles of Buddhas. The other 9 titles are worthy of receiving offerings, one of proper pervasive knowledge, one who has perfected clear conduct, well gone one who understands the world, unsurpassed knight, regulating hero, teacher of gods and humans, Buddha, world-honored one. Adding the title Thus Come One makes 10 titles of Buddhas. Originally, every Buddha had 84,000 titles, but that was too much. People could not remember them all. Gradually, the Buddha's titles were reduced to 10,000, and then they were reduced to 1,000, and then further reduced to 100. Even then, people still found that there were too many. They couldn't remember 100 titles for the Buddhas. Even computers might freeze. So they came down to the 10 titles listed above. These 10 titles are shared by all Buddhas. The path all Buddhas traverse is the same. All Buddhas are equally entitled. It is said the Buddhas of the 10 directions and the 3 periods of time share the same Dharma body. Therefore, they also share the same 10 titles. Thus Come One. Thus refers to the principle. Come refers to the specifics. That indicates how the noumenal principle and the phenomenal specifics are not obstructive of each other. Thus also means riding on just such a path, they come to realize proper enlightenment. Essentially, the Buddhas do not come, nor do they go, because the Buddha's Dharma body pervades all places. They do not come, nor go. Chan refers to dhyana, a Sanskrit word that means stilling thought. Stilling means becoming tranquil. Thought refers to mental processes. Chan can diminish our thoughts so they do not move so much. Movement of thoughts is the manifestation of false thoughts. No movement is the true mind and proper thought. Thus, we should still our thoughts so that we do away with false thinking. Chan also means cultivation of reflection. You ask, since stilling thought means getting rid of all false thinking, how could there be any reflection going on? Reflection seems to exist and yet seems not to be there. It does not necessarily exist, nor is it necessarily not there. Reflection is actually the investigation that goes on in Chan meditation. When you investigate a meditation topic, for example, you are supposed to investigate the topic and not investigate what might follow. The investigation of the topic, that is, the moment before it becomes put into words, means you focus on the point before language starts to take over, before anything is said. Does that investigation have any thought in it? No. It merely investigates the topic. Investigation is like using a chisel to drill a hole or a drill to dig a well. You drive a drill into the ground and drill in further and deeper until you make a hole. The process of drilling a hole is like the process of investigation. The difference being that the process of investigating Chan is devoid of visible form, whereas drilling a well is a visible process. Nonetheless, the tangible can be used to represent the intangible. You drill and drill. Even when it seems you can't get in, you still keep drilling. When at some point you drill through, then you have a breakthrough in your investigation. That's what we call investigation. But what is investigated? The investigation pertains to cultivation of reflection. That is Chan, the Chan of the Thus Come Ones, which is devoid of false thought, devoid of deviant thought, devoid of confused thought. Only proper thought is used to investigate and drill that hole. When you have actually broken through, then you become enlightened. That is called having a breakthrough in your investigation. The skill that brings sudden enlightened understanding is itself the Chan of the Thus Come Ones. Question. Master, if you were to say that you were enlightened, would that mean that you are not enlightened? Answer by the Master. If I were to say that I am not enlightened, it wouldn't mean that I'm enlightened either. Why do people have to say they are enlightened? Concentrate. The work of Chan meditation resembles a mother hen sitting on her nest. As the mother hen is thinking of her eggs, she never leaves the nest. She simply concentrates and keeps the eggs warm. She wouldn't sit on the eggs for 5 minutes and then run away to do some other business and later return to sit on the eggs once again, only to run away again 5 minutes later. The chicks would never hatch at that rate. The principle we observe in Chan meditation is the same. We must concentrate in each successive minute. Don't fear an aching back or sore legs. Don't be afraid of difficulty or pain. Simply concentrate with single-minded effort. Why? we concentrate and investigate who is mindful of the Buddha until the mountains topple, the waters dry up, the tides recede, and the rocks appear. And it is at that moment that we can get enlightened. Investigating Chan is also similar to the way dragons nurture their pearls. Dragons watch over their precious pearls at all times. They attend to them carefully at every moment. Therefore, these precious pearls grow brighter each day as the dragons guard them attentively, day and night. People who practice Chan meditation are just the same in that they never allow their minds to ramble with scattered thinking. An ancient worthy said, "When not even a single thought arises, the entire substance comes into view." We can rephrase it to say, "When idle thoughts no longer arise, the entire substance comes into view." When one is free of idle thoughts, then one can have some success. Meditators don't think about becoming Buddhas, getting enlightened, or gaining wisdom. They simply work hard and cultivate vigorously. When the time comes, they naturally become enlightened. You can't think about when you will get enlightened. If you think like that, you can think to the ends of time, but you'll never get enlightened. If you stay in the Chan hall and sit and walk and sit, then after a long time, you'll have a chance to get enlightened. As it's said, Chan comes with long time sitting. Investigating Chan is done the way a cat stalks a mouse. The cat concentrates its energy and focuses its attention, patiently sitting beside the mouse hole, waiting for the mouse to appear. As soon as it comes out, the cat pounces on it. The cat cannot slack off. Once it becomes distracted, it will no longer be able to concentrate. Chan meditators are the same. At all times, they maintain proper thoughts and avoid idle thoughts. This is basic knowledge for beginners in Chan meditation. A verse says, "Calmly complying with adversity. Accept your lot in life and be content. Then all your afflictions will go away. Don't crave pleasant forms and sounds. Don't be greedy for fame and profit. Glare at me, I won't notice. Scold me, I'll applaud you. Hit me, and I'll kneel down. I only laugh, never cry. Among people, there isn't anyone like this. Nowhere in the world can such a one be found. But there is a true monk from the West who holds this Mani pearl in his heart." The Strength of Patience, an essay by Master Hua. As to we people who are born in this world, some of us have come to repay our debts. Some have come to make debts. Some have come to cultivate the way. Some have come to create karma. Some have come for fame. Some have come for profit. Some have come for food. Some have come for sex. We ourselves do not know the causes and effects of our past existences, nor how to cut off the delusions and put a stop to the flow. Moreover, most do not wish to understand the good and evil karmic conditions of their past lives, or to change their faults and start anew. Instead, we discharge our responsibilities in a perfunctory manner and act in reckless ways. Even though there may be those who possess wisdom and who wish to know their past lives and perpetuate the causes for sagehood, still, it's not easy. Nor is it easy for them to suddenly arrive at an understanding, to remain forever unchanging, and to endure suffering and toil. That is because ignorance is difficult to break through, and obstructions pile up layer upon layer. Outflows are hard to replenish, and doubts billow like thick clouds. Those of us who truly wish to understand must seek within ourselves when things do not go our way. We should not curse heaven and blame others. We should subdue ourselves and return to propriety. We should not contend, not be greedy, not seek, not be selfish, not pursue personal benefits, and not lie. In dealing with situations, when adversity comes, accept it compliantly. We should be friendly and humble toward all people. We must bear what others cannot bear, yield what others cannot yield, eat what others cannot eat, accept what others cannot accept. That's because you should know that most ordinary people repay virtue with enmity, but they are the very ones who help us perfect the strength of our patience. Whenever unreasonable and adverse situations feed on each other and others slander us, we see them as good and wise advisors, intent upon helping us increase our virtue and our cultivation of the way. A verse says, "When adversity comes, accept it compliantly all the way to paramita." Advisors like Devadatta help us. Retributions from past lives' kindness and enmity are being received in this life. Distant aeons' grievances and affinities are being cleansed right now. In reconciling accounts and repaying debts, we should not delay our payments. We should establish merit, atone for our offenses, and not let life pass in vain. Clearly understanding good and evil, be careful about cause and effect. Be as if perched on the edge of a deep abyss, as if treading on thin ice. How could we expect escape to be easy? And now, the master comments on this essay. What is meant by adversity? Adverse conditions are anything that you do not want to experience, things that go against you. If there are things that you like, then they are not considered adverse conditions. But the things that you don't like or the situations that go against your grain are called adversities. For example, there may be things you don't like to hear, but people say exactly those things to you. There may be things you don't like to eat, but you're given that very food. There may be things you absolutely can't bear, but you have to bear them. When adversity comes, accept it compliantly. Tolerate what comes along in a harmonious and gracious manner. For example, if someone scolds you, you should think, "Oh, this person is singing a song for me. I should enjoy listening to this song." What's so bad about getting a scolding? Just accept it compliantly and happily. In that way, you can cultivate the strength of patience. Adverse conditions create heroes. Situations can be either favorable or adverse, but if things go against you, they are the very things that increase your resolution and your willpower so that you will bring forth the determined resolve to be a genuine person. That's the meaning behind adverse conditions create heroes. When you cultivate, you shouldn't be greedy for people to make offerings to you, thinking, "Oh, if people would give me food and clothes, that would be really good." That's a pretty meaningless attitude. Rather, you should think, "There's nobody making offerings to me, and I should be happy about that. If I don't have food to eat, I'll just go on a fast. If I don't have enough clothes to wear, I'll just fortify my body so that I'm not turned by either cold or heat. I can bear it. And if I don't have a place to stay, I can live under a tree." You should train yourself that way. You shouldn't be greedy for people to give you things or feel happy if you get some little thing from them. If you don't have virtue in the way and you accept offerings from other people, it's not easy to digest them. That's why it's said, if you haven't done away with the three aspects of thought, it's hard to digest even water. The three aspects of thought are thoughts of the present, thoughts of the past, and thoughts of the future. If you always have these three aspects of thought and strike up a lot of false thinking, then even if you were to drink just one swallow of water offered by someone, you wouldn't be able to digest it. There's a saying, "A single grain of rice from a donor is as heavy as Mount Sumeru. If, having eaten it, we do not cultivate the way, we will have to repay it by becoming an animal. In the future, we will have to be reborn as a cow or a horse to pay back the debts, or be a chicken and have to lay eggs. When a chicken lays an egg, she says, "Guada, guada." Guada means, "My offenses are great." If interpreted this way, then she sounds like she is honestly repenting and reforming. But does she really understand? No, she's not really admitting that her offenses are great. Actually, she's saying, "The eggs I lay are larger than anyone else's," because da can also mean exceptionally big, oversized eggs. And so she's still exaggerating. You should know that when a chicken has to lay eggs, she's paying back for the offerings she received from other people in the past. To cultivate the strength of your patience means you train yourself to take things that go against you. You fortify your strength of patience to the point that you can endure what cannot be endured. As do we people who are born in this world, some of us have come to repay our debts. This means that in the past, some of us overspent. We overdrew our accounts. As a result, we have come back to this world to pay back our debts. All of us have some debts to repay. What debts might we have? If you're someone's son, you are repaying debts by being a son. If you are someone's father, you are repaying debts by being a father. If you are someone's husband, you are repaying debts by being a husband. If you are someone's wife, you are repaying debts by being a wife. And if you are a disciple, you are repaying debts by being a disciple. But if you are my disciple and you don't want to repay them, that's all right. Some have come to make debts. Some of us want to take out more loans. What do people like that do? They are always trying to get off cheap. They always are mooching off other people. They refuse to ever take a loss. People who are not willing to take losses are here to make more debts. Some have come to cultivate the way. That's like some of you here who have left the home life to cultivate the way. Some have come to create karma. There are people who come to this world to kill, to commit arson, and to steal. All that creates karma. I'm just speaking in general terms. If you analyze this in depth, you will see that there are numerous variations. Many, many people have come here to create karmic offenses. Some have come for fame. All day long, they want to be number one. They are trying to buy a name and fish for a reputation. They want a name, even though it is false. Some have come for profit. Some people have come into this world only in order to strike it rich. They just want to make money. They don't know about anything else. You tell them about something else and they say, "I don't care about that. Just as long as I have money, everything is fine." For money, they would do anything. Once the rooster crows and they get out of bed, the only thing they have in their minds is to rake in the dollar bills. Some have come for food. They say if a person lives his whole life without knowing how to eat, he's really an idiot. I've got to eat delicious dishes and rare delicacies every day. As long as the food they eat is delicious, they don't want anything else. Just take a look at the way pigs eat soybeans. If you feed them soybeans, they shove their snouts right into the soybean mix, flapping their ears up and down. In the past, I've fed pigs, and I know the way they eat. The way chickens eat is to peck at their food nonstop, to the point that they entirely forget everything else. Some have come for sex. They think that the pleasure between men and women is the greatest pleasure, that there's nothing higher. If they can't enjoy that pleasure, they feel they might as well die. We ourselves do not know the causes and effects of our past existences, nor how to cut off the delusions and how to put a stop to the flow. Most aren't willing to cut off the flow of birth and death. Moreover, most do not wish to understand the good and evil karmic conditions of their past lives. They don't want to learn about what karma they have created and what effects they will reap. For example, a good act will reap a good result. An evil act will reap an evil result. But most people do not wish to know these things. They just go about life in a very muddled way. They don't want to change their faults and start anew. They would never say, the reason why I'm going through so much suffering now is because in the past I didn't cultivate. And so now I will change my faults and really cultivate well. They wouldn't do that. Instead, we discharge our responsibilities in a perfunctory manner and act in reckless ways. They say, just live day to day, just muddle along. They are sloppy and casual. Even though there may be those who possess wisdom and who wish to know their past lives. Now, there may be people with some wisdom who want to know about their previous lives. Someone may find out that in his last life he was a dog because in times past he always liked to fight with people. He liked to bite people. Wise people will want to know their past lives and perpetuate the causes for sagehood. Say, in the past they planted causes that will lead to sagehood, and so in this life they want to continue those causes. But still, it is not easy. Nor is it easy for them to suddenly arrive in an understanding, to suddenly understand their past lives. Nor is it easy for them to remain forever unchanging. That is, they may think, no matter whether I get a response or not, I'm still going to cultivate. I'm going to be forever unchanging. But it's not easy for them to endure suffering and toil. Most people would say, I've already taken too much of a loss. They don't wish to endure suffering. That is because ignorance is difficult to break through. Ignorance is very hard to smash. And obstructions pile up layer upon layer. There are so many obstacles that impede our cultivation. Outflows are hard to replenish. Our outflows are like a leak in a bottle. You can fill the bottle up, but the water leaks out again. And doubts billow like thick clouds. You talk to people about Buddha Dharma, and they start having doubts. They say, is it really that way? Their doubts are as thick as clouds. You talk to them about the truth, and they don't want to believe it. Just now, someone said that he doubted whether virtue in the way, virtuous behavior, was a true principle. That's really a pity. Those of us who truly wish to understand must seek within ourselves when things do not go our way. When things are going the wrong way, for example, when people are not treating you well, you should return the light and illumine within. Always return the light. See within yourself. This means find your own faults. Do not put the faults on others. We should not curse heaven and blame others. People shouldn't say heaven is unfair, people are unjust. Why is it that I'm so poor and he's so rich? We should subdue ourselves and return to propriety. This means that we should restrain our selfish desires and always comply with proper principle. We should not contend, not be greedy, not seek, not be selfish, not pursue personal benefits, and not lie. In dealing with situations, when adversity comes, accept it compliantly. We should be friendly and humble toward all people. Being friendly doesn't mean one fawns on people, trying to play up to them. It's not that when a wealthy person shows up, one makes bows and fusses over them, fawning in a disgusting manner. But that when poor people come, one doesn't even look at them. One won't pay the least bit of attention to them. That's not the way to be. We must bear what others cannot bear, yield what others cannot yield, eat what others cannot eat, accept what others cannot accept. That's because you should know that most ordinary people repay virtue with enmity. Most people in the world are quite mundane. The better you are to them, the more animosity they feel toward you. And so they repay kindness with enmity. Why do they do that? They behave that way out of stupidity. That's how stupid people can be. The kinder you are to them, the more they return your kindness with resentment. But even though that's the way things are, still, we have to be kind to people. we should still behave virtuously toward people. Let them be as they will. We must use this attitude as we cultivate the way. But we must also understand that there are two sides to most questions. That means that every person has his or her own reasons for doing the things they do. When we cultivate, we must focus our attention on one thing. We must be sure that we ourselves are behaving correctly. But we don't need to pay attention to whether other people are behaving correctly. It suffices that we ourselves are doing the right thing. Whether other people are good to us or not doesn't matter. They may be among those who repay virtue with enmity. But they are the very ones who help us perfect the strength of our patience. If we're good to people, we should not seek a reward from them. When we bestow kindness, we don't ask for recompense. And after we have given something to someone else, we don't regret it. When we are kind to people, we don't want them to pay us back. Why? We should say, I am representing the sages. I am representing heaven and earth by holding to true principle. We should do things that benefit others. We shouldn't make other people benefit us. I want to help others. I don't need other people to help me. That should be our motto. If we want others to help us, then we will be weak and reliant. If we lack sufficient resolve, we will keep asking other people to help us. We will be sticks in the mud, listless and procrastinating. We won't be able to muster any energy. We should have a firm will. Adverse conditions mold great people. When people are not good to you, it may be because they are testing to see whether you are true. And if you are true, if you are not seeking any rewards, then what does it matter whether they are good to you or not? It's best you don't believe the principles I'm explaining, because once you believe them, you will always be taking a loss. Whenever unreasonable and adverse situations feed on each other, to the point that people are being very discourteous to us and others slander us, we should see them as our good and wise advisors, intent upon helping us increase our virtue and our cultivation of the way. They are helping us nurture our blessings, develop our wisdom, and amass virtue in the way. They are actually helping us out. I always say to you that there are many people who scold me and slander me. Often the ones who scold me are monastics, ordained monks and nuns. I'm telling you the truth. Some people say, I haven't seen monks and nuns scold you. Well, how many monks and nuns do you know? Actually, among lay people, there are many who slander me as well. There's a saying that goes, if you don't attract jealousy, then you must be a very ordinary person. But we should look into it. Why are people scolding me? It's because they're afraid their Dharma protectors will believe in me, and then they won't have anything to eat. They think that if they scold me, then their Dharma protectors will protect their Dharma, and then they will have food to eat. And so it's a good thing. Indirectly, I'm giving to them. If they scold me, and after scolding me, they get food to eat, then isn't that a case of saving a person's life? Isn't that a good thing? And so because they scold me, they get Dharma protectors. Because they scold me, they obtain benefits. That's excellent. Buddhism advocates compassion, and this is one kind of compassion. Therefore, it's fine. I'm helping them. A verse says, what follows is a verse. I call it a verse. Gatha in Sanskrit. It's not a poem. The words don't have any rhyme, and it doesn't have to adhere to a fixed meter. These eight lines have a looser structure. When adversity comes, accept it compliantly all the way to paramita. This is a method of crossing to the other shore. Advisors like Devadatta help us. Shakyamuni Buddha himself said, Devadatta is the very one who helped me realize Buddhahood. Devadatta was willing to fall into the hells himself so as to help the Buddha realize Buddhahood. Retributions for past lives' kindness and enmity are being received in this life. Whether people are kind to us or unkind to us is a matter of conditions from past lives. Now we should pay them back and clear up our accounts. Someone may say, I don't believe in past lives. Well, I ask you, do you believe there was a yesterday? Yes, I do. Do you believe there was a last year? Yes, I do. Well, if you believe that, that's just past lives. Suppose you killed a person last year, and this year someone kills you. If you kill someone's father, then someone will kill your father. If you kill someone's brother, then someone will kill your brother. If you scold people, then people will scold you back. If you kick someone, then someone else may slap your face. That's called repayment in kind. You say that you don't believe in past lives, retribution, but if someone were to hit you now, would it hurt? If it would hurt, then that is also a retribution. Distant aeons' grievances and affinities are being cleansed right now. Past feuds and grudges are being cleared up now. In reconciling accounts and repaying debts, we should not delay our payments. People are too concerned about progress, but can it end birth and death? If you can progress to the point that you don't have to die, that's real progress. Well, somebody says, I don't believe in the principle you're discussing. I didn't ask you to believe. You are so smart that you are unable to believe something that a stupid person like me says. We should establish merit, atone for our offenses, and not let life pass in vain. We must own up to our debts. We must pay them back. Don't drag them on. Don't seek foreign aid so that you accumulate more debts. Instead, we should establish merit and redeem the offenses we created in the past. Don't let life pass in vain. Clearly understanding good and evil, be careful about cause and effect. We should understand that if we do good, we will get a good reward. If we do evil, we will get an evil retribution. As is the cause, so is the effect. Be as if perched at the edge of a deep abyss or as if treading on thin ice. How can we expect escape to be easy? It's as if we were approaching a deep abyss or treading on thin ice. It's very difficult to get out of cause and effect. We have to be very careful. Now someone is saying, Dharma Master, I don't believe a single sentence of what you said today. Then I haven't uttered a single sentence. Question. Please explain, one's character is naturally noble when he seeks nothing. All the victories that have been won since ancient times are solely because of patience. Answer by the Master. Don't expect anything from people. Patience means that one bears what one cannot bear. However, a master cannot be completely tolerant of his disciples. He has to use both kindness and toughness. He spoils his disciples by being too patient with them. You've got to walk that road yourself. Let me explain a bit more. When someone certifies to the actual appearance of things, then it is as if he has taken a bath and washed away all the dirt and filth. You wash clean, and the karmic offenses disappear. But you have to wash yourself in order to get clean. This is just what Great Master Shun Xiu said. The body is a Bodhi tree, the mind a bright mirror stand. At all times, wipe it clean. Let no dust alight. When you can do that, you are traveling the road that leads to certifying to the actual appearance devoid of people and dharmas. But you have not yet arrived at that. However, the six patriarchs said, basically, Bodhi has no tree. He already didn't need a Bodhi tree. The bright mirror has no stand either. There's no need for a mirror on a stand to shine and reflect. Originally, there's not one thing. Reaching the point at which not a single thought comes up, the totality is revealed. There is nothing at all. Where can the dust alight? Where would any dust settle? The dust represents karma. It becomes empty. But you have to walk the road of cultivation to attain certification. It is not enough if you just listen to it or talk about it. You have to be mindful of it and personally practice it every day. You can investigate Chan, learn the teachings, study the Vinaya, or cultivate other Dharma doors. You must actually cultivate. If you do not cultivate, you will never attain certification. Nothing is gotten without effort in this world. I do hope all of you will not be irresolute and give up on your own future. I do hope that you will not fail to cultivate or decide to stop halfway down the road and drag your heels so that you cannot go forward. This verse was for ending the 98-day Chan session in 1971. Recognizing the true you. 14 weeks of Chan are now over, but have you seen your true face? In the days to come, work hard, be diligent, with no dwelling and no thought. Awaken to non-production. No place for competition. The participants in our Chan session are working at a very superficial level. They've turned meditation into a contest to see who will win first place. They are thinking, if you meditate for 3 hours, then I'll meditate for 5, so that I can keep the upper hand. If you let such thoughts control you, can you really expect to get enlightened? Even if you sat still for 80,000 great aeons, you'd still be unable to understand your mind and see your nature. And why is that? Because you have thoughts of victory and defeat. There's a verse. Fighting brings an attitude of victory and defeat that stands in opposition to the way. Further, it provokes the four marks, which sends samadhi power far away. This verse warns cultivators not to fight to be number one. When your spiritual skill matures and your wisdom appears, other people will spontaneously acclaim you as number one. Then you can be considered truly number one. But if you contend to be first, then your attitude of victory and defeat stands in opposition of the way. Cultivators of the way should be like water, humble and modest, neither contending for merit nor striving for virtue. They bestow advantages on others and keep the disadvantages for themselves. It was Lao Tzu who said, "The highest kind of goodness resembles water. As it benefits all things and never contends, it stays in places that most people despise, and thus it resembles the way." The highest goodness refers to the best kind of cultivators who resemble water as it flows into the lowest places. Although water benefits all things, it refuses to compete for merit and virtue. Whether it is birds, fish, beasts, plants, or creatures born from wombs, eggs, moisture, or transformation, water treats them all with equal kindness and gives them all whatever they need. Cultivators of the way should be just like water, in that they should regard all living beings as their parents from lives past and as Buddhas in the future. We make kindness and compassion our duty and expedient resourcefulness our practice as we rescue living beings from the sea of suffering. A cultivator is willing to dwell in places where living beings are unwilling to stay. With this attitude, he stays close to the way. Any thoughts of victory and defeat do not accord with the creed of a cultivator and stand in opposition to the way. Cultivators of the way want to be free of the four marks. They want to have no mark of self. Ask yourself, who is this here cultivating the way? You'll find that there isn't anyone cultivating. They want to have no mark of others. They have no thoughts of competing with others. They want to have no mark of living beings. Since they have no marks of self or others, quite naturally, the mark of living beings is also emptied out. They want to have no mark of lifespans. Since the mark of living beings has been emptied out, how could there be any mark of lifespans? But once you indulge in thoughts of victory, those four marks will appear. Once they arise, how can you attain proper concentration and proper reception? Why don't you try this out in practice? In a word, anyone who maintains the four marks is an ordinary person. Anyone who can be free of them is a bodhisattva. Cultivators should remember this verse from the Vajrasutra. All things born of conditions are like dreams, like illusions, bubbles, and shadows, like dewdrops, like flashes of lightning. Contemplate them in these ways. Anything with shape or form is considered a dharma born of conditions. All things born of conditions are like dreams, illusory transformations, bubbles of foam and shadows, like dewdrops and lightning. They are ephemeral. Contemplating everything in this way, we will be able to understand the truth, let go of attachments, and put an end to random thoughts. The Vajrasutra also says, past thoughts cannot be obtained, present thoughts cannot be obtained, and future thoughts cannot be obtained. Why can't we get at past thoughts? Because they've already gone by. What's the point of worrying over them? Why can't we get at present thoughts? Because the present moment doesn't stop, even for an instant. If you claim that this moment is the present, as soon as the words leave your mouth, that present has already gone by. Time never stops. Why do we say that the future thoughts cannot be got at? Because the future hasn't arrived yet. You may admit that it hasn't yet come, but right then it arrives, and so the not yet come doesn't exist either. Therefore, the past, the present, and the future are three thoughts that cannot be possibly attained. If we can cultivate according to the Dharma that the Buddha spoke, then straight away we can realize the state of nirvana. Cultivators of the way must use proper knowledge and views as their standard and cultivate vigorously. Our goal is to leave behind the mark of speech so that there's nothing left to say. We also want to leave behind the mark of the mind and its conditions so that there's nothing left to climb on. We want to leave behind the mark of written words. Once words are gone, they can't represent our speech at all. Since there's no way to express with words, what is there to remember? What is there that we can't put down? What is left to take so seriously? We should apply ourselves to this and stop toying with the superficial aspects. Someone is thinking, today in meditation, my legs didn't hurt and my back has stopped aching. Before I knew it, it was time to stand up and walk. Well, that's because you were sleeping. Of course, you knew nothing at all. Don't misinterpret this state. If you become attached, then you can easily enter a demonic state and be taken in. Pay attention to this, everyone. Pay no heed to external states. Ignore them completely. Let states come and go naturally. Don't let them influence you one way or the other. The Shirangama Sutra explains this matter quite clearly. I hope that all Chan meditators will look into the details of the 50 Skanda demon states of that sutra, which are explained very thoroughly. The Shirangama Sutra serves as a precious mirror for Chan meditators, and every cultivator of the way ought to be thoroughly familiar with it. Verse ending a Chan session. Wield the wisdom sword. 10 weeks of Chan are completed today. With a new life, Bodhi starts to sprout. Always wield the Vajra wisdom sword, vertically, horizontally, and in the north, south, east, and west. Another verse for ending a chan session. Smash empty space to pieces. Though the session has ended, we must continue to work hard. Smashing empty space to pieces allows our original face to emerge. Who says you're empty? Someone heard me talking about space and how wonderful it is. That person now wants to become space. He thinks, once when I was meditating and several times when I was listening to the sutras, there was nothing at all. It was empty. It really was. I saw it. I felt it. Huh. In that case, you aren't empty yet. If you were really empty, how would you know you were empty? If you were empty, how could you see emptiness? If you were empty, how could you feel you were empty? How could you have the sensation of being empty? Take a good look at yourself. Are you empty or not? If you are empty, why is there still a you? How can there be the notion of, I feel? Is that empty?